The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you all for joining us.
I'm sorry, Erica, this your engineer. We're not hearing you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Peace, greetings, Abibi Fahodie. Thank you all for tuning in to Blacks in Business Radio this evening. I am your host this evening, Erica Foxy Mama Parker Smith. And tonight on our show, we are going to be talking about building generational wealth and also applying cooperative economics. And before we start, I'd like to give a big shout out to our regular host. Yes. Brother Robert and Sister Cece, thank you all for allowing me this platform to connect with the people and hopefully offer some insights, inspiration, and motivation and information. So this evening, we are going to be talking with Brother Cimarron Reed Bandelay, who is the former divisional president of the Universal Negro Improvement Association, founded by Marcus Garvey. And currently, he presides over the Marcus Garvey Society and is the co-founder of New Community Development Center, which is located on the south side of Durham, North Carolina. So I'm going to unmute him and bring him on. Peace, good brother. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. How are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing excellent.
All right. So we're going to get started and talk about tonight. As I said, our topic is going to be building generational wealth, our current situation as a community, and then also cooperative economics, because I know you all have some really good things going on. So before we start, let's tell the people a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Yes, ma'am. First, I'd like to thank you for having me on the show and your listening audience as well. And so just a little bit about myself, you know, as in the bio, my wife and I, we are the co-proprietors of New Community Development Center, which is located here in Durham, North Carolina. And we are going on 5 years in terms of, you know, operating the center. The center is, of course, you know, for our people. And we started out initially as educators. She and I, we both have a background in education. We've taught on many levels, and we also had a school back in 2005 called Now Valley Children's School. And, you know, eventually, you know, we moved out of, you know, having the private school and moving into now, you know, a community center. And, of course, you know, anytime you do anything within our community, it can be quite challenging, you know, if you're not a barbershop, a salon, you know, soul food restaurant, so forth. So with a community center, you know, we are specifically built around asset building. And just as this, you know, particular show that's on this evening, this is a part of what it is that, you know, we're related to, and that's asset building and community development. So, again, I'm just thankful to be on the show this evening. Definitely want to speak about generational wealth, want to speak a little bit about asset building as well as community development.
So with the center, so you said you all often have challenges. So what type of challenges do you all face being a community center?
Well, being a community center, it's one of those things where, you know, you don't have the type of traffic that you necessarily would if you were a grocery store or a gas station and so forth. And sometimes, you know, in terms of marketing, you know, it can be somewhat of a challenge because you want to make sure that, you know, your people are getting the resources and the services that they actually need. One of the things that we put on is expungement clinic for people in our community, and we try to do this around Malcolm X's birthday because we, you know, consider Malcolm to be probably by far one of the greatest reformers in our race. And you know, this is to aid and assist our people to get certain things taken off their record, or at least finding out, you know, what they need to do in order to, you know, kind of make that happen. Youth programs, cultural programs, you know, we do like an African Liberation Day, of course, you know, Marcus Garvey Day celebration. What we found and what we tend to see is that, you know, we're a very ceremonial type of people. We love to celebrate, but when it definitely comes down to actually, you know, rolling up our sleeves and, you know, getting dirty, that's the part that we don't necessarily want to be involved in. And this is part of the reason why, you know, we've kind of moved from some of the things we used to do into just community development, so that, you know, people can still be involved, but they don't have to necessarily be involved in all of the intricate details in order to build, you know, a strong community or strong new community development center.
So then what, for the community development or with the asset building, let's give the people like a little history lesson, because I know you are amazing at that, having attended various events there at the New Community Development Center, giving people some historical context as to why the asset building and community development is important, especially during today's current economic times that we're in.
Yes, ma'am. And of course, you know, this is something that's not new. You know, oftentimes we try to make something appear as if it's new, but we know that we come from, you know, a particular tradition. And so being a Garveyite, being a Black nationalist, we're coming from that particular spirit. We're dating back, you know, to 1854, one of the first conferences, which was held in Ohio by Martin Delaney. And this is where, I guess you would say, the term was coined, Black nationalism, by Hezekiah Ford Douglas. And from that period, you know, we always saw that we were trying to do certain things within our community or keep our community tight. And so through asset building is no more than just the resources that already exist within our community. And of course, you know, when we look at our community now, it's we're finding that there's, you know, less and less businesses that exist in our community. It's not like, you know, when I was coming along in the 80s, you know, right down the street from the house, you know, you had your corner stores, and all of your corner stores were owned, right, and operated by people who look like you. Some of the gas stations owned and operated by people who look like you. So, of course, with my children's generation, that's pretty much obsolete. I've been in different parts of the country, and, you know, to my amazement, to my surprise, you know, none of the people reflect the community in which the majority of those people live in. You know, these are people who are coming from other parts of the world,
right,
speak very limited English, and yet, you know, they're in a position now where they're making money off of us. So the four primary people that this asset building and community development plan is functioning off of is Martin Delaney, Marcus Garvey, Dr. Leon Sullivan, and Dr. Chancellor Williams, excuse me, and fifth person, Dr. Amos Wilson. And so when we take a look at, you know, the materials that they put together and some of the programs that they put together in their respective areas, we see that they were, you know, capable of doing quite a bit. And I'll take Marcus Garvey, you know, for instance. Just in Harlem alone, you know, he was able to hire well over 1,000 people through the businesses that the organization had produced. And that was just Harlem. That's not even other parts of America and outside of America.
Right.
And during the time that he was incarcerated in 1925 to 1927, he had founded a school in Virginia, Claremont, Virginia, called the Universal Liberty University. And with that particular school, it was a residential school, and young people were able to attend, and they were learning certain skill sets so that once they graduated, they could come out in the community and, you know, do all sorts of things. When we look at Reverend Leon Sullivan out of Philadelphia, one of the things that he was capable of doing was actually starting an internal stock market. And this, of course, is, you know, kind of speaks to the community development plan that we want in place. He had the 1036 plan. And with that plan, this is where members of his congregation took $10 a month and they put into, they invested into this plan for 36 months. And they were able to amass all sorts of businesses. In fact, even if you Google it now, you can pull up Progress Plaza. And it still stands. It's still there. And there are a couple of other businesses that they founded as well. And if we go back to that tradition, if we do those type of things, I'm quite certain we would be able to reap the same type of benefits. The only thing is, not just with Dr. Sullivan, but there have been many others who have operated similar programs. They have, and this is just some, because there have been many who have been successful, but there have been some who have not been able to move past a generation, meaning 30 years. So within a 30-year period, some of the properties were either put up for sale, foreclosed on, or taken over by the city. And so what we want to be able to do is we want to be able to go beyond that mark of a 30-year period so that it is truly a generational thing. And, of course, you know, we have all sorts of other people, you know, who reflect and mirror that in their own community. But we have to find out what's that number one thing that, you know, we must do. You know, here in Durham, my wife and I, we moved to Durham in 2000. And when we moved here, the Latino community, they were putting together their credit union. And since that time, and it's, you know, 17 years later, they moved from one location to a new location. And if you go inside of their credit union, you know, it's just them. It's representative of them. In the state of North Carolina, we used to have 25 black credit unions. None of them exist anymore. They're obsolete. They're gone. But yet we have a state has the – yes, ma'am?
Yeah, I said no. Yeah, you said not a single credit union.
Not a single black credit union. And when I say not a single black credit union, there are some black churches that have – credit unions inside of their church, but it's for their congregants, only for the members of their church. So it's nothing that's external, nothing that you and I, you know, can be a part of. But with the state of North Carolina, we have the most HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities, in the country. We have 10.
Right.
And yet the Latino community has absolutely no historically Latino college or university in the state of North Carolina. They also have grocery stores, something that we don't have. I think Winston-Salem, and this is probably back in the 90s, they had a grocery store called Five Stars, which is defunct. And so when we look at other communities and we can see that they can prosper and that they can build and yet not have the institutions that we have for higher learning, then something must be wrong, and something must be wrong with the thinking. And so we've heard our lecturers, we've heard our scholars, we've heard some of the best grandioso speeches that could be pointedly said, but the one thing that we don't see behind the words is the actual action. So the plan that we're putting in place now is for the layman, for the working class, for, you know, the everyday brother and sister who is trying to, you know, make something happen so that, you know, their children and their children's children can have something.
So what I hear you saying then, because we often hear people say cooperative economics repeatedly everywhere, but then, right, like you said, we don't see the actions behind it, despite having not just examples, but successful examples of how to actually apply the principles of cooperative economics. So can you tell us then, share with the listeners, the plan that you are currently speaking of with the new community development center?
How
we're going to address get people back there.
Yes, ma'am. So the plan that we're implementing, you know, again, it somewhat mirrors Dr. Sullivan's program. The difference is ours is more of a 2020 plan, and again, this is primarily for those who are within the working class. So we're saying that, one, we want to develop the credit union, the Black credit union model, and through our study and research, and we have reached out to all of the most successful Black credit unions to see how we go about getting started. So here in Durham County, we make up a little over 100,000 people meaning Black people. And so we just want 1% of that population. You know, we're not looking for 10%. We're not looking for 100, or we just want 1% of the population. We know that we need at least 1,000 to go ahead and start up the credit union that we're trying to build right now. In fact, this Saturday I will be in Charlotte giving a presentation so that we can, you know, continue to build membership, and we'll be going throughout the state of North Carolina trying to build membership. And of course, it's not just for those in the state of North Carolina. So if any of your listeners would like to be involved, you know, they can be in contact with us. The next part of it is the community.
All right, go ahead.
No, yes, ma'am.
Okay, I was going to ask, so you said it's for the working class people, because a lot of times when people hear investing and things like that, and you hear somebody talk about opening a credit union, they think, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to afford this. So just appealing to people who may be looking for investment opportunities, are thinking about, okay, you know what, I want to build generational wealth for my family, and not knowing really where to start, this sounds like an awesome opportunity for them to educate themselves, you know, and get some financial literacy also in this process.
That's right. And I'm glad you said that, because part of it is a lot of this will be survey based. You know, we want, you know, the everyday brother and sister from the student all the way up to the elder, so that we can get the type of information that we need in order to better serve those in our community. And so then this goes into the whole asset building and community development. There are those who are within our community who are an asset to us in the sense that they have the skill set. It's just that, you know, we're not connected. As I speak about the center, And there are other centers that are in our community as well that are underserved and underutilized because people do not know that these places exist. And so we want to, one, connect all of these various people. Again, even with this program, you know, there are those who are in the listening audience that are assets. It's just a matter of us, you know, coming together, you know, collectively and pooling our resources so that we can make things happen. Dr. Amos Wilson, the way he puts it in Blueprint for Black Power, he talks about property and power, and he talks about thing property, and he talks about rights property. And what I'm speaking about this evening speaks to the point of rights property. And so that's more so, or what it refers to is like pieces of paper, like stocks, certificates, and bonds. And so as we generate, you know, that type of wealth, like I was speaking about the whole 2020 plan. So, you know, $20 a month would provide you a situation where you have shares in the corporation, the actual corporation, so that, you know, we can start to acquire properties that are in our community that are considered to be blighted. Unfortunately, self-help credit union, and people can, you know, they can Google self-help as well. The properties that they acquired on the south side and also on the west end, all of those properties that they have amassed, it was given to them by the city for free. So, like, if you go to the tax assessor's website, all of those properties come up as zero in terms of how much they paid for the properties. And now what they have done, they have built up, you know, within our community. Now, part of the reason why they've been able to do it is because, one, they are a credit union, meaning that they have the assets, they have the resources. So it's not a case of, you know, a credit score situation where they say, well, you know, we don't know what you would be able to do from a financial standpoint because you wouldn't be able to take care of it. Well, they know that they'll be able to take care of it because of the members who are already invested in the credit union. And so
now, is that the now difference we see, between a bank and a credit union?
Yes, because the credit union works for the people versus the bank. You know, the bank is the bank makes its profit, but the credit union works specifically for the people. And it goes back to the point that you were making about, you know, financial literacy and educating the people. And that's why people start credit unions.
Okay. So the credit union then is putting money into the community, essentially.
Yes. That's right.
Okay.
Yep. So that's, you know, that's why the credit union is so important. The community development aspect of it, the reason why that is important is because this is how we build strong community. So in the section of Durham in which I live in, which is the West End, they've recently, one house is being built now, but another one has already been built. And this particular house that was built on this one street is now going for $500,000, and a lot of the properties on that street are dilapidated, which, you know, really stand within the range of under $100,000. So now those people who live in those properties are being pushed out, most rent versus, you know, own their own property. The other property that's being built now is a little under $500,000. So we see how, you know, the community is being gentrified. We see these new businesses that are being built, and our people are being told that it's for their benefit because they're bringing jobs to the community. But if you look at the type of jobs that they're bringing more part-time jobs, and the last thing a black person needs is another part-time job.
Right. Wow.
So we see this mixture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we see what's happening because gentrification, the one thing that a lot of our people don't understand is with gentrification, it causes homelessness, and it also causes people, you know, to literally lose their lives. because they have no place to go. They have no place to be. The people who are most affected by it are our elders, women, children, veterans, mentally ill, and so forth. So many of these people are impacted by this, and as a result, they're pushed out. So I like to call it, you know, Hurricane Katrina without the water.
Oh, wow. So in this instance then, with the economic development plan and establishing the Black Credit Union is a means then to offer people like another alternative. So then when the neighborhood, so that we can actually reclaim these neighborhoods for the benefit of the community instead of pushing the community out, create viable businesses that would then create jobs that aren't going to be part-time, but give people an actual living wage, and also means to build that generational wealth with the ownership of the shares and things like that, that they can then pass down to their children.
Exactly. And create the type of jobs and create the type of job training that will keep people in their community so that they will not move out of their community. And of course, you know, that's been one of the things that has is part of our legacy in terms of since the Great Migration. Our people are still migrating and not necessarily understanding that they're still a part of that tradition, because we're trying to still find places in this country where it is quote unquote less racist. You know, my parents, they migrated from the South all the way up to the North, you know. You know, then of course, you know, I migrated because I left home and went to college, and you know, now, you know, having children, will my children, you know, migrate and leave to see where it's something that's better, where they won't have to deal with white supremacy and, you know, all of these other things. So, you know, this has pretty much been the pattern. I mean, even when we look at our brothers and sisters from the Caribbean, you know, they pretty much do the same thing. Now, even when we look at the continent of Africa, you know, we see that great migration where, you know, they're in parts of Europe, Canada, you know, in the Americas. So we've been following this migratory, you know, path, you know, trying to deflect, you know, the real issue at hand, and that's white supremacy.
So all of this is like, it has so much context and there's so many layers to it when talk about the problem, and everybody sees the issues, but at some time, you know, at certain points, I just think people are overwhelmed, you know, by the magnitude of the issue, but then taking steps such as this, and this whole model is something that can be replicated in communities across the country. You know, each one teach one model that we can all like come together. And, and like you said, you don't need but 1%.
Exactly. That's what we're looking for, because, you know, part of it is our people are still looking for the next documentary. We're looking for the next book. We're looking for the next lecturer. You know, we're looking for that charismatic leadership versus doing the work, simply just doing the work. And so in order to break us out of that behavior, so in order to break us out of that behavior, you know, we have to you know, actively just be involved. And of course, again, as I, you know, stated earlier, we want to simplify this so that, you know, we know how people, you know, their time is. You know, you give people a weekend, that, you know, that's their rest time, that's their downtime. You know, we're simply trying to create a situation where once, you know, they invest, you know, it's something that's just happening on a monthly basis. It's just like, you know, we love to watch some of the programs that come on PBS on the public broadcast station. You know, whether it's UNC or whoever, and, you know, they're always saying, hey, you know, We know you like, you know, the programs that we offer, but we just need you to continue to give. So as, you know, their funders give, which is not a lot, you know, sometimes it's $5, sometimes it's $10, sometimes it's $20, you know, on a monthly basis, you know, they're able to provide the things that people enjoy watching. And so this is what we're saying with the community development aspect of it, is that, you know, we know you want to see certain things in your community, and we're producing certain types that are coming out of these institutions. So why not give? Why not, you know, put our community in a position of power versus, you know, waiting for the next European nonprofit to come along and exploit you, you know, in the name of liberalism. So
yeah. What's the time frame that you all are looking to implement this? Because I know that the membership drive has started and doing the different, you know, the information meeting, things like that, and getting the word out. But what's the overall time frame for people to be involved?
Right. The initial time frame was October 2017, you know. Since that time, what we've just really been doing is just trying to, you know, build the membership so that we can, you know, get our numbers. You know, the goal is 1,000. So between now, you know, in 2018, we want to be able to achieve our numbers. And that's not to say that, you know, we're going to stop trying to get people involved, because, you know, the more we have involved, the more it simplifies what it is that we're trying to do. And this is why, you
now,
know,
can people
with the,
do
with,
more?
I'm sorry?
Can people be involved in other ways other than just, you know, giving, you know, to, like, to having their account at the credit union and then also doing the $20 a month with the Community Development Corporation? Are there other ways that people can also be involved in the two initiatives?
Sure. And, you know, and it pretty much comes in the context of in-kind services. You know, there are things that, you know, we definitely need assistance in, you know, whether it be marketing, whether, you know, just getting the word out so that, you know, others can, you know, be a part of the presentation, see the presentation, you know, determine whether if this is something that they want to be involved in. This isn't something that, you know, we want to, you know, kind of shame people into being a part of. You know, my thing is, you know, we want people who really want to be involved, you know, who can see the vision, who can really see outside of the box. You know, this is a plan, this is a program that's not for for everyone, and of course, you know, we're clear and we know this. We know that, you know, from a psychological standpoint, we got a lot going on with us.
Was there a vetting process?
And that's what, and you know, in the spirit of Dr. Leon Sullivan, you know, we realize that's one of the things that we have to do is have the actual vetting process. And then also we want to make sure for those who are contributing that, you know, there's full transparency, because without that transparency, you know, people become, you know, weary, you know, instead of just the annual report, you know, that you have to do for the state, you know, we want to make sure that it's a quarterly report for the people. You know, we want people to see, you know, where their money is going, you know, what's being done, because again, you know, they'll have a stake in this. They'll be shareholders. So as shareholders, you know, they have that vote, you know, their share equals that vote. We want to make sure that, you know, any and all things that we do, you know, are representative of the people and the people's needs.
This is amazing. I mean, I'm excited about it, because this is something that we don't often see, you know, and it's just so it's good to get back to that, because our grandparents saw it, they had it, they experienced they lived it, and then somewhere along the way we just kind of strayed away from it. So it's, you know, coming back to our roots. is amazing.
That's right.
Because,
that's,
you know, as we discussed in the past about, you know, the article that came out saying that the community was essentially going to have no wealth, you know, if we continue down the same path that we're currently on. So it's like, it's not too late to do a U-turn and change things.
That's
so
this
is
definitely
the means to do that.
That's right. And of course, you know, we want to, you know, some would say, how can I put this? You know, we want to be certain that, you know, in doing what it is that we do, you know, we don't necessarily need the fanfare. You know, we don't necessarily need the bells and the whistles. We just need to just, you know, do what it is that we need to do. You know, if you look at GM, if you look at Ford and, you know, all of these motor companies, you know, they hire all sorts of people, and that's to do one thing, and that's to produce one product. You know, they're not really concerned about people's religious affiliations or their philosophy or ideas. They're more concerned with the end product. And of course, that's, you know, the mindset that we have to have. You know, what is the end product? You know, what is it that we want for our people? What is it that we want for our children? What is it that we want for the next generation? You know, versus, you know, us being stamped, as what other people, you know, perceive or see us as.
Mm-hmm. And we need to just, like, get out of that anyway, and just, and I tell everybody all the time, I'm like, you know what, just go be great. Like, no matter what field you're in, no matter what you do, just go be great at that, you know, and just forget what people are saying and everything. Let's just mind our business for a while, just bring it in, you know, and just focus internally and handle business.
That's
and that's it, because that's how the Asian community has been able to do all. They're just like real quiet about it, and they just handle their business and just do their thing, you know.
Exactly.
And just, they're like, okay, we
with
don't
no...
care what people are talking about, without all the drama, you know. And it's like, and everybody does not have to be in charge. Like, everybody knows to work together for the community, for the shared vision and collective goals. It's like, look, we are all gonna march this way. Like, we going north. Okay, that's the way everybody's going.
Exactly.
Like, if you want to stop off on the way there, you could do that. So
That's right. That's right. For your listening audience, and this is just some examples of what some Black folks, you know, have done and are still doing. And of course, these are Black churches, but the idea is there. I mean, it's physical, it's tangible. So with the Wheat Street Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia, they have a federal credit union. They have over four decades where they provided over $1.5 million in loans to Black folks. They have what's called the Wheat Street Towers, and they have a development for senior citizens. All of this, you know, the listening audience can, you know, can look up. You have the Allen Temple Baptist Church out in Oakland, California. They have housing units. They have 75-unit housing for the elderly. They have 51 additional unrestricted units. They have a credit union, and they have $1 million in assets, and they also have a Black blood bank. In Queens, New York, and anyone who's familiar with, I can't think of his name now, Floyd Flake, they have housing in Queens, 144 multi-housing units. They have a credit union, a oil consortium, and they used to, it's not theirs anymore, but the school operated for 30 years, and that was the Allen Christian School, and it went from kindergarten to 12th grade. I want to say they started from kindergarten to 6th grade, and then they, you know, were able to grow the school out. And then Dr. Leon Sullivan, who I spoke of earlier, you know, with Zion Baptist Church in Philadelphia, they have their own private housing called Zion Gates. He had also started what was called Opportunities Industrial Center. It's called OIC, and OIC is all across the planet, parts of Africa, here in the States, and other places as well. Of course, as I spoke of earlier, Progress Plaza. And then they also had the Progress Aerospace Enterprise. So these are just some shining examples of what Black folks can do when Black folks get together. And these are these are institutions that are sturdy. That's there. They're on streets. You can drive past them. You can see them. Nothing that's demolished. Nothing that's torn down. These things are there. So again, I'm not saying that we're doing something that's different, that's innovative. We're just doing what our ancestors have been doing.
Mm-hmm. But so many of us, I'm thinking that like the history just is kind of lost among a lot of people to even realize mm-hmm. that, no, this is really something that we did, you know, even before that's integration. Right. It's like we had all these businesses, thriving businesses, oh, yeah. and thriving communities that were not blighted, right. where people, you know, took care of the community. Everybody watched out for each other, took care of one another. There was no need for things like social services because the community right. looked out, you know, right. and we really right. had right. that village mentality. So this
that's
is
right. That's right.
It's just, it's so much information, but I mean, I love it at the same time. And just being able to have a platform to share the message and the goals and the visions with people, to give the example right. and kind of go against that mindset that we can't work together, you know, and make great things happen, because that's simply untrue. And it's just like, that that's is right. false. So every opportunity I have to give examples of us working together for a good cause, and it's not coming together for a hashtag of some tragedy.
That's right.
It's like that's there's right. plenty of positive activity going on, and it's just like, pick something and get busy.
Exactly. Get busy and work on
work
it.
To do. That's right.
More there's than enough.
Definitely enough.
More than enough. More than enough. Yeah, because.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, when we speak about, you know, the history or the origins of Black self-help, you know, it came out of that tradition, you know, with the Black church, with Richard Allen and, I can't think of his name, but, you know, they made boots. And, you know, through their church, you know, they had the first Black banks, the burial societies, the insurance companies, the first schools, libraries, and home for the elderly. And, you know, somewhere at some point, you know, things, you know, became lost, because now, you know, the Black church brings in well over $2 billion a year in dues, donations, and charitable giving, you know.
Right.
You know, you would think with... Exactly. You would think that, you know, with the type of funding that they amass, you know, over you know, a year or years, that our community, you know, would pretty much reflect that, you know, when in essence it doesn't. It doesn't
right.
at all. So we lost something along the line, you know, along those lines, and now we you know, have to, you know, take a look in the mirror and say to ourselves, you know, do we want to continue down this path? I know with Dr. Claude Anderson, he had given a timeline and had indicated that, you know, we would be stuck in a certain situation by a certain time, a certain year, you know, if we didn't do X, Y, Z. Now, of course, you know, I don't believe, you know, in that thinking, because, you know, there's certain things in history that we can just look at, you know, where you would think that a certain group would be, you know, exterminated or taken out, and, you know, that the odds were against them, only to see them, you know, rise up. So I think that, you know, through due diligence, you know, we can definitely make things happen. We can do that through, you know, a set of rules that we have to establish and just, you know, rigidly follow. And we have to do it for a certain period of time in order to just, you know, really take hold and take stock of, you know, ourselves and what it is that we're doing.
So for all the people who may be listening, this is not like a you're going to be rich next week, you know, when you
no,
get
not
involved.
At all. That's right.
This is going to be something for the long haul, correct?
Exactly. Exactly.
This.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, this isn't you know, the get rich money scheme. This isn't the pyramid. You know, this is just you know, some boots on the ground, you know, kind of work.
Mm-hmm. So this is not like multi-level marketing. or
right, where you know somebody's
marketing,
you got a couple of people in the back of the room with all you have to do is go see so and so at the end, and you know they can sign you up for this, and no, it's not one of those kind of situations. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Because we've all been there. Like, we've all done it.
That's right. That's right. That's another. Right. That's right.
Sometimes repeatedly with different companies, you know, thinking it was going to be different
that's
this
right.
time. So.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
So this is going to be just real, tangible assets.
Right. Right. That's right. Yeah. And, and if I can, you know, to your listening audience, some, good, books to, kind of look at, Blueprint for Black Power by, Dr. Amos Wilson, The Myth of Black Progress by Alfonso Pinckney. Also, his book, Black Americans, the fourth edition, Global AIDS Myths and Facts, Tools for Fighting the AIDS Pandemic. And the reason why I bring this particular book up is because it deals with it from a historical standpoint as to, how, we've been impacted, not just economically, but also through disease as well. The three primary factors that, we can look at in terms of our status, not just in America, but just the world over, is education, occupation, and income. And so, when we look at those, particular areas, we see that they all are interrelated in how they reinforce one another and why we are in, the circumstance that we're in.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, that is definitely some good resources for people who, this information may be new to, because I love meeting people where they are and not where
That's
we
right.
are necessarily. And
exactly.
some of us have, a lot more information
right.
and been, just studying and just really actively pursuing, the work and not just,
right.
Like, and I posted, on social media, let's walk the talk.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. I attended, when I was in high school, I attended a vocational technical high school. And, when you would go to your shop or your trade, you had two things that were working, and one was, theory and practice. With theory, of course, you always had the classroom setting where, you would be in the books and you would study, and you'd have to solve for certain things. But then with practice, you'd have to go into the shop wing and you would have to apply what it was that you learned in the classroom. And so we oftentimes get caught up into, the various theories, the various schools of thought. And we get so far out there that we forget what we were supposed to be doing in the first place.
Right.
It's easy for us to change our diet and forget that we have to build something in the community. It's easy for us to switch our attire and move from a Western outfit to a African outfit and forget what we're supposed to do in the community. We can easily change our name and forget that we're supposed to be doing something for our community. We can ascribe to certain spiritual beliefs or walks of life, but continue to forget what we're supposed to do in our community. So it's easy for us to do those things because we can always say, well, this is why certain things don't work for us in our community. But at the end of the day, we still got to have something to come home to. And so if it's not
right.
in place, it will always follow us.
Right. Right. So are there
And
any...
one other, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead. You're good.
No, I was going to, share with the listening audience one other good book, and that's Towards Black Community Development by Manu Apem. Excellent, excellent book.
Okay, and Brother Scotty, if you're not back there, if you're listening and you're on the controls, because I know we've had conversations with past guests about this whole notion of cooperative economics and how to actually do that, and we've talked about micro-investing. So here is another take on that and how to actually do that in investing in other Black businesses and other small businesses within the community that can serve the people, so that we can get some people, you know. And it's great to have a business, but it's even better to be able to hire people.
That's right.
You know, and give, you know, and teach other people, you know, skills and training, and empower them to also be able to then go out and replicate that and do that and share those skills and those lessons and information with other people. So that is absolutely an awesome thing. So you said you're going to be in Charlotte this weekend giving a presentation. So can you tell people in the listening audience about that? So if somebody wants to come and come out to the presentation and get this information, where would they go?
All right. Yes. So this will be this Saturday, November 18th, and this will be at 2412 Bates Ford Road Library from 3 to 5. And so if anyone is interested, if you know of anyone who you can think of who might be interested, you know, definitely please have them come out so that, you know, they can, you know, get an idea of the presentation, get a feel for the information. Definitely consider you know, what it is that, you know, we present this upcoming weekend. And, you know, we're just trying to lock down other, you know, areas as well so that we can build the membership. We want to make sure that, you know, we're able to, you know, from a generational standpoint, safeguard what it is that we, you know, that we build. We don't want, you know, we don't want our children looking back and saying this was something that once was, and, you know, we can remember, you know, when, you know, this was the place to be, but, you know, we want them to say, you know, this is something that we have by way of the small contributions that were made by the everyday Black person in their, in that, you know, community.
Right. So how is that, so, yeah. How is it going as far as here locally in the Durham community, since I also live in the Durham community too? So what has the reception been to the idea?
So it has really been, it's really been good. And, you know, again, like I say, it is, it's a learning moment, because one of the things that you learn is that, you know, you can't just move amongst one circle. You have to move throughout the entire community and get people involved. And that's the beauty of this whole, you know, situation. It's not a one type person that we're looking for. You know, we're looking for, you know, people who are highly interested and dedicated, you know, to the advancement of our people. And again, you know, I make no apology for, you know, putting Black nationalism out there first, because we want people to be clear that this is a program, you know, for Black people. It is for Black people. You know, it's not multicultural. You know, it's not all inclusive. It's for Black people. It is for Black people. We do know and we do understand, you know, because of the various civil rights acts that have been signed over the years, we are clear as when we start certain businesses, how many people can be employed of color before, you know, they say, oh, well, you know, you have more than that number, so therefore, you know, it's not operating in the confines of, you know, racial equity. So we're definitely clear about that. So, you know, it's a lot of things that we're picking through right now. But in terms of the response here in Durham, you know, it's been good. We want it to be better because we're located, you know, here in Durham. It's not a Durham plan, but it is a plan for our people. And we just, you know, happen to be, you know, we happen to reside here in Durham.
And so as far as like the community development, so since you don't have to necessarily live in Durham to participate, are the assets also then going to be, you know, spread out throughout the nation then to also invest
in maybe communities
outside of Durham? Okay.
Yes, and yes, that's you know, that's the hopes, you know, the vision, you know, when you look at you take the Nation of Islam, you know, how they were based, we'll just take the period of the 50s where they were based, the 50s and the 60s, you know, they had farmland, you know, outside of the Midwest. You know, they had businesses, you know, stretched across the country. And of course, you know, that's, you know, the aims and hopes of doing, you know, we want to, you know, ultimately in the end, you know, we are still looking, you know, to Africa.
Right.
So, you know, it's not just confined to, you know, the United States of America. You know, it's a much broader plan and program. It's just that, you know, we want to ensure that our people, you know, are instrumental in moving it to the next level.
Right. Right. So is there any other, like, how would people, I guess, get in contact with you or get in contact with New Community Development Center?
Right. So if anyone is interested, you know, in the listening audience, and I'll give the email, and it's new, that's nu.community@yahoo.com. That's new.community@yahoo.com. You know, and you can just, you know, drop us, you know, an email and express if you're interested, you know, in what it is that we're doing so that, you know, we can follow up, you know, with you. We extend this to those who are serious about asset building and community development. You know, we want those people who, you know, really express, you know, this type of interest, because oftentimes we run into people, and, you know, we've had this talk before, you know, we have a tendency of you know, questioning one another to the point where, you know, we talk ourselves out of why we don't want to be involved. But you know, when Chipotle, you know, had that outbreak, you know, it wasn't too long before black folks was lined up again, you know, getting the burritos and the nachos.
Right.
So
without question,
we're selective. That's right. We're very selective when it comes to working with one another. But you know, if there are any outside parties, we just know without a doubt, you know, they're going to correct the problem. And, you know, we can go back to patronizing them.
That is the truth. That is the truth. I want to thank you for all of this amazing information, because you gave, like, a fire hose of information this evening. So
thank
hopefully
you.
With that being said, I hope that it lit a fire in somebody and motivated and moved somebody to action. So, it has been an absolute pleasure, as always. Is there anything else that you would like to share with the people before we go to break and sign off for the evening?
Well, I just want to thank you for inviting me, you know, on the show. I want to thank, you know, those who you work with, you know, on your program, for allowing me the opportunity to share with you, as well as your listening audience that took the time out to listen to what I had to say this evening. So, you know, in the model of the Universal Negro Improvement Association, it's one God, one aim, one destiny.
Ashe. I love it. Thank you so much. And I also want to say thank you again to Brother Robert and Sister Cece for giving me the opportunity to come on to Black Talk Radio and be a guest host on Blacks in Business Radio every third Thursday of the month. And I do truly look forward to speaking with other entrepreneurs and business owners and helping people within the community so that we can definitely, you know, continue on in the vein of our ancestors and those who came before us and really get us back to our roots and continue to build on the great legacy from which we came. So thank you so much again for being on. And Brother Scotty, did you have anything to add to this evening's show?
No, ma'am. But I'm here in North Carolina, so with you all, and glad to hear that he'll be sharing that knowledge in Charlotte. I'm not in Charlotte. I'm not far from Charlotte. But, you know, everything that I've been hearing, a lot of people don't know the history that is here in North Carolina concerning Black people and Black businesses and what have you. So it was good to hear someone speak on that history.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. And that brings us to the close of the show. So thank you all. I know you could be doing several other things and you chose to spend that time with us this evening. And I thank you all for participating in the show. Thank you, good brother. And thank you all for listening. All right. Good night.
All right. Have a great one. Thank you,
Dan. You too.